What's up, dude?
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Another week, another episode.
That's right. That's how weekly shows work. We're doing it. We're keeping it up. Look at us go.
Woot woot.
We're totally mentally fine, by the way.
Oh yeah, we're doing great today.
Yes, for sure. Hello, guys. Welcome back to another episode of the Movie Nights Roundtable. We have a decent show for you guys today. We have some fun stories to talk about, and we're actually going to go ahead and just dive right into them. Nicholas, what story do you got for us first?
Our first story comes to us from Variety, and that is that Martin Scorsese is starting to collect cast for his new movie that was announced, which is a Frank Sinatra biopic, because there always has to be a musical biopic in the pipeline. Otherwise, Hollywood might just crumble.
That's correct.
Interesting about this is he has some big names going on to it. I'll let you take it from here.
That is true. And he also has his Jesus movie coming out that we also knew about. And
Wait, is that a different movie than the Frank Sinatra biopic?
Allegedly.
Oh.
We'll see.
We'll see what happens there.
But yeah, I'm going to pull this from Variety. The 81-year-old director has mapped out his next several projects. Sources say he plans to shoot two films back-to-back. The first about Jesus, the second one a Frank Sinatra biopic. The Oscar-winning director who helped usher in Hollywood new wave of 1970s is looking to bypass the studio system and independently finance Life of Jesus, based on, I'm not even going to attempt that name, a book. He took the same approach with the 2016 drama Silence. In fact, Scorsese would like to reunite with Silence star Andrew Garfield for the Jesus project, though it's unclear if the 40-year-old actor is being eyed for the titular role or play one of his disciples. Scholars believe Jesus died sometime between the ages of 33 and 38. Miles Teller has also been eyed for the picture. I wonder if Miles Teller and Andrew Garfield, are Jesus and Judas going to bare-knuckle brawl in this movie?
I hope.
The bleed for Listen, this, I'll tell you that.
Andrew Garfield might be the closest thing we have to Jesus.
I mean, that's true. That's true. The Sinatra project could also hit some snags. The legendary crooner's daughter, Tina Sinatra, controls her father's estate and hasn't yet given her blessing to the film, but that hasn't stopped Scorsese from putting together a killer cast that would see frequent collaborator Leonardo DiCaprio playing the singer, interesting choice, and Jennifer Lawrence portraying his second wife, actress Ava Gardner, sources say. It was Gardner who broke up with Sinatra's marriage with Nancy Barbado, Tina's mother. With the two biggest movie stars on the planet as leads, the film is drawing interest from major studios and streamers. Apple, which financed Killers of the Flower Moon, would love to stay in business with Scorsese, but Sony is said to be the frontrunner to nab the project. Good for Sony. You know it's going to be attractive to Scorsese because he loves theatrical stuff, and Sony has no streaming service. So I'm sure I'm sure he's enjoying that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, interesting stuff going on with Martin Scorsese. This man just will never retire, which I'm a big fan of. He's 81 years old. He's still killing it. Look, I think both movies are going to be rather interesting. And I think the Frank Sinatra one is the most surprising because, you know, Scorsese's flirted with, you know, Jesus in films before with The Last Temptation of Christ and with Silence. And I think that this new project is kind of just going to be another exploration of that. But the Sinatra one surprises me because it just seems very, I almost want to say out of character for Scorsese to do like, I mean, yeah, he's done biopics before like The Aviator, but it's almost like, oh, I didn't know this was the vibe to kind of pair Scorsese with Sinatra. Does that surprise you at all?
It does and it doesn't. What would surprise me the most out of it is I think if it ended up being a sort of generic musical biopic, you know, something in the vein of like a Bohemian Rhapsody or the Bob Marley, I think that would shock me more. So it makes me wonder if there's much more of an in that he has, it sees the movie kind of being something grander or more intimate and personal. You know, I think something like if you look at last year's Bradley Cooper's Maestro, you know, that wasn't really a musical, like a biopic. It was really kind of this intimate marriage story as a backdrop. So I wonder if he would take a similar approach regarding like their marriage, especially if you are hailing, you know, Jennifer Lawrence, Ava Gardner as sort of a second lead in the movie. I wonder if the focus is more on them as opposed to like Frank Sinatra's life and the music as a whole.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And it might also make sense as to why those two are cast right away.
Yeah.
To kind of explore that aspect of the relationship, that side of his life. I think that would be very interesting to see.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm interested to see just Scorsese's stamp on this story. Because it's a story that's not unfamiliar to people. Frank Sinatra was a very high-profile person.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of information about him, documentaries and so on. So it's interesting to see Scorsese take this, and I'm wondering what aspects of his life are going to be left out, what's going to be included in, because Scorsese's no stranger to including, you know, all the bad stuff too, which is why they're probably having a hard time getting a blessing from his daughter. But, you know, these are just things that we'll have to see.
And I think DiCaprio in talks to be Sinatra is interesting as well, because he's another person. You know, similar to Scorsese, I feel like if there's not an end to the story that makes it something unique, like, I don't see that him falling into that.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's going to be almost like a Wolf of Wall Street approach, in that I wouldn't consider The Wolf of Wall Street a Jordan Belfort biopic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about a very specific thing that Jordan Belfort did. And maybe that's what this is with Frank Sinatra. Like,
It's one particular story of him.
Yes. Like, I'm wondering if maybe that's what's going on here. I'm interested to find out more details as this kind of comes out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you go back to that era, though, too, you know, I think it fits, because if you look at the Sinatra era, you know, you have Dean Martin, you have Sammy Davis Jr., you have all these colorful characters like that Rat Pack. You know, there's so much, many routes you can go. You know, they did Ocean's 11 together, the original.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the filmmaking side of Sinatra. There's the casino side of Frank Sinatra, yeah. Which I know Martin Scorsese has a fondness for that sort of era and the gambling. So I could see it maybe even focusing more on that storyline as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah,
it'll definitely be interesting. The man's 81 and has two very massive movies in the pipeline on top of just last year, what, a $250 million movie that got a bunch of Oscar nominations.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This far into his life, it's very impressive how much he wants to turn out and how much he does care and passion putting in. It's not like he's just trying to make stuff because he's like, I need to leave something for my family. Yeah. Like, you know, he does have that desire and that passion to keep moving forward, which yeah. is awesome.
It's very much so, what do I want to make next?
Yes.
Which, and to me, can turn out some of the better films because it's solely something he wants to do.
Well, what's interesting about it, too, is it's really funny because you have, like, a counterpart, you know, you have Francis Ford Coppola,
yeah.
who's, what, 85?
Something like that. He's in his 80s.
He's older. And he has all this stuff going on with Megalopolis where, like, no one wants to buy it and no mm-hmm. one's interested. And he's like, I'm making it and it's self-funded. You yeah. know, you see this part where all these sort of old Hollywood names are really, like, want that agency of, well, I'm going to do what I want to make. And if they want it, then whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's going to be an interesting trend going on for sure. I wonder mm-hmm. the next generation with, like, the James Camerons and stuff. I wonder, like, after Avatar, like, how that's going to go, because considering he's had a lot more financial success than these other people, you know,
yeah.
it'd be interesting to see. But what do you guys think about Martin Scorsese's next films being a Jesus story and a Frank Sinatra story? Let us know your thoughts in the comments below as we move on to our next story. And Nicholas, what do you got for us next?
Our next story comes to us from Deadline and also involves Martin Scorsese again. Oh, it's a big Scorsese show.
Yes.
And another surprising person. Family Guy creator Seth MacFarlane is partnering through his Seth MacFarlane Foundation with Martin Scorsese's Film Foundation. And they're going to be funding the first ever curated restoration of historically significant animated shorts from the 20s and 40s.
The
20s through the 40s, I should say.
The pairing we didn't know we needed.
But the one we deserve. Put cast Seth MacFarlane as Frank Sinatra instead of DiCaprio.
Yes, that would be brilliant. That would be brilliant. I'm going to pull from Deadline
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Family Guy creator Seth MacFarlane is partnering through his Seth MacFarlane Foundation with Martin Scorsese's Film Foundation to fund the first ever curated restoration of historically significant animated shorts. MacFarlane is committed to saving and honoring the art form in its earliest days forward. He's been fascinated by animation since childhood when he began drawing. He's also an animation alum of the Rhode Island School of Design, and it talks about how Family Guy is celebrating its anniversary. He's quoted saying, I'm so grateful, or I should say Scorsese is quoted saying, I'm so grateful to Seth MacFarlane for his enthusiasm and support of these restorations. What an astonishing experience to see these remarkable pictures that I had experienced for the first time as a child brought back to their full glory. Imagine the reactions of children today, because the films now seem as fresh as they did when they were newly made. 9 animated pics from Max and Dave Fleischer, who created Betty Boop and Coco the Clown, are among the pieces that are being restored. And it goes on and just talking about more of the restoration. This is awesome. I love this. And Seth MacFarlane has also been kind of the surprising voice for restoration before. And if you ever hear him talk about filmmaking and films, he's a massive film nerd. Mm-hmm. And kind of hearing him go on about this and teaming with Scorsese, I think this is a wonderful thing. And I think these old animations, you know, it's not the first thing that comes to your mind when you think of, like, oh, this is something that needs to be saved and restored. And so the fact that there are proprietors or people who are representing them in this film space is really cool to see, where you get these unlikely pairings. And I'm just fascinated to see if the result of these restorations, you know, if maybe some of these classic characters get a resurgence, or, like, what happens once these things are restored, and what can we go back and what else can we restore? I find this very interesting. And what are your thoughts on this whole thing?
No, I think it's great. And I have a very interesting fascination with Seth MacFarlane because of all his sort of stuff outside of animation. You know, when you think of animation, you don't necessarily think of Seth MacFarlane because you kind of, you know, as long running as it's been and just in the cultural zeitgeist, it's always been Family Guy. You know, I feel like Family Guy, American Dad is still running, but I feel like these sort of adult animation that he's involved in has sort of kind of just been brushed under the rug.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's sort of hasn't been as actively involved. I think he just does a lot of the voice work now because he really just wants to be a big jazz singer.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that when you look at just his passion for animation and you pair that with kind of what's been the results of it, you know, he's so involved in the preservation of animation to this level. So it's great to see him pairing with someone who is in the process of film preservation as a whole, Scorsese. You know, I think that the two of them working together, it's going to be very interesting to see. And I think that animation could, of that era, really fall under the rug of just sort of like lost pieces that everyone just sort of is like, oh, it's animation. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it would be interesting too. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Guillermo del Toro ends up coming in and having some sort of role in that too, because he's such a big proponent of it. But yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting pairing for sure.
Let's just hope George Lucas doesn't come in and start making special editions of all of them.
He's going to reanimate them just to be different things entirely.
Yeah, so there's going to be more CG. What do you guys think of Seth MacFarlane and Martin Scorsese teaming up to restore these animated films? Let us know in the comments as we move on to our main topic story of the day. And Nicholas, what do you got for us next?
Our next story comes to us from Deadline, and that is that Quentin Tarantino has dropped The Movie Critic as his final film.
Yes, so this one is fascinating because it quite literally came out of nowhere. We had reported on the show previously, and many of the trades have been talking about Quentin Tarantino's 10th and, quote, final film being The Movie Critic, and details started coming out. He was kind of circling Paul Walter Hauser, maybe even Tom Cruise, to kind of come and be in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, suddenly, Quentin Tarantino decided, no, I'm just not going to do this.
Quote, he simply changed his mind.
Yes, and he is now going to completely just drop the film from developing it, and he's going to start developing something completely new, rumored to even be with Brad Pitt. I'm going to pull from the Deadline article now. Quentin Tarantino's movies are always full of surprises, and here's one about The Movie Critic we didn't expect. Deadline can reveal that Tarantino has dropped the film as his 10th and final project. He simply changed his mind. Tarantino was going to have Brad Pitt as the principal star, which would have marked their third teaming after Inglourious Basterds and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. There were rumors that many from the cast of his past films might take part, and Sony was preparing to make the film after doing such a superb job on the last one. Word is that Tarantino had rewritten his script, which delayed the start of production, but this is his 10th and final film, and Tarantino simply decided The Movie Critic will not be it. So, here's kind of something that a couple things that I want to talk about this with. One, I understand somebody not cracking the story,
mm-hmm.
being like, let me write this again. Like, let me take another shot at the story. I don't think I've cracked it yet. That happens to everyone. The 10 film things is so arbitrary to me. Like, it's kind of upsetting. And, like, to me, because, like, he's done this before, because for a while he wasn't going to make Hateful Eight because that script leaked.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very like, I'm not going to make this. But this one feels a lot different than that one. Like, you knew at the time for Hateful Eight, and it's like, oh, he's still going to make Hateful Eight. Like, you can kind of feel that.
Yeah.
I genuinely feel that he's not going to make this film after all of this. And I don't know. To me, I don't know why he's kind of holding himself to this regard of like 10 and that's it. Like, just fucking make 11. Like if this is a story you want to tell, tell the story. No one gives a shit. Nobody gives a shit about his 10 film role. No one. We just want to see him make good movies, which he does. So just keep making them. This makes no fucking sense to me. What do you think about this?
No, listen, Quentin Tarantino's 10-movie rule is dumb. It's an arbitrary rule that he imposed on himself, and he's making up rules as he goes along. For example, he filmed part of, what, The Four Rooms, but that doesn't count because it wasn't a Tarantino original. Kill Bill, that's one movie.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So what's going to happen after he makes this 10th original? Kill Bill Volume 3, because that's just one movie still, too.
Yeah.
Oh, the Star Trek movie he's wanted to make. Yeah. That's not a Quentin Tarantino original, so that one doesn't count as well. You know, he's going to keep making loopholes. And literally he can just break it and no one's going to complain because what are they going to be complaining about? Yeah. That we get more Tarantino movies?
Yeah.
I mean, like him or not, he's one of the best filmmakers currently working.
Yeah.
You know, his movies have such cultural impact on it. And I know there's kind of back and forth on him as a whole. But, like, I mean, he's self-imposing a rule on himself that is just depriving the world of more of him.
Yeah, and it's dumb. Like, I think Christopher Nolan was quoted in an interview where someone brought up saying, like, yeah, Quentin Tarantino is going to stop after 10. And Nolan was like, do you believe him? Like, he was like, you think so? And it's
that's
just like,
what I'm saying. He's going to make Kill Bill 3. It's going to, that's going to be a thing that he does. And if he really was hell-bent on, like, I feel like he's really was happy with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Hell, the leaks were saying that
Brad Pitt was going to play Cliff Booth.
Yeah, the movie critic might just be, okay, so same rule as Kill Bill then. Let's just say that this is part of that universe and that's a different one. You know, like, it doesn't, what are we doing here?
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, to me, the reason why we're acting like this, because it feels like he wants to tell this movie.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to make this movie, but he's like, but it's not a good, like, final movie for me, so I'm not going to make it.
There's pressure.
Which it's like, he should not feel burdened at all. He's like, he's what, barely 60? Probably.
Yeah.
I imagine so. You can correct me if I'm wrong in the comments, but, like, he's probably in his early 60s, and it's like, we just talked about Martin Scorsese's, like, 81. Ridley Scott's 86. He's cranking them out.
He's going to break it eventually. You're going to tell me he's going to sit idle for 20 years doing nothing?
No. And, and I know he says, like, oh, I'm going to write novels. I'm going to maybe do TV. It's like, he's going to make another movie.
Yes.
Maybe it might be 10 years. Like, maybe he'll take a break, but he's going to get that itch that every creative person gets, like, that story itch of, like, man, I gotta make this movie. I gotta do it.
And if
I just don't know why he's holding himself to this.
Well, if he's hell-bent on Once Upon a Time, if he wished that was his final film, then just fucking say Kill Bill's two movies and then you're already done.
Yeah.
Like, don't make another movie then.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so easy. And it's also like, his whole thing is like, oh, so many filmmakers, after a while, they lose their mojo and they fall. Yeah, but who gives a fuck? You still remember those filmmakers from the good shit they did.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, Ridley Scott. One of the best filmmakers ever. He's made some shit movies, and he'd probably be the first one to tell you that. But he's also made...
Fuck you very much.
Yeah. But he's also made some of the greatest films of all time. Mm-hmm. So when I think of Ridley Scott, that's the Ridley Scott I think of, the one who makes the greatest films of all time. And every now and then, we'll watch one and go, that wasn't that good. But then you get The Martian, which came out, like, in 2015.
Yeah.
Great movie. Then you look back at his filmography. You got Alien, Gladiator,
Blade
Runner.
You watch the bad one, and you're just like, man, I kind of want to watch Alien again, though.
Yeah, like, and it's like, you still think highly of the filmmaker, even if they make a bad movie. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, dude, you're going to be fine. You're going to be remembered well, regardless, you know? And it's just weird to me.
I really hope that this story ends up, like, blowing up so much that his last movie is sort of a meta commentary about the weighted pressures of like it just is following a director trying to make a perfect movie.
Damn it. They've already have a movie with this title, but imagine if Quentin Tarantino made a movie called The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
It'd be pretty good.
It'd be good. But yeah, what do you guys think about Tarantino scrapping his final movie to kind of leave his legacy better with his 10th and final film? Leave your thoughts and comments below. We're going to move on here to something that we find interesting. We're big fans of John Campia over here. Well, I am, at least. Mm-hmm. And he actually had an exclusive on his show that The Hollywood Reporter ran with and confirmed, and that is that Keanu Reeves is going to voice Shadow in Sonic 3.
Yeah, he is.
I have no game in this. I have no dog in this fight. What do you think?
I'm fucking so excited. We got to go to an early screening of the first Sonic.
Yeah.
And I remember we went in and we're like, oh, like, we have to go see this. Like, come on. And it was actually good.
Yeah, it was fun.
I quite liked it.
I still haven't seen the second one.
I enjoyed the second one quite as well as two. Idris Elba as Knuckles is hysterical. I'm very excited for his show, which comes out, I think, this week, Friday.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch the shit out of that.
Yeah.
And they do tease Shadow at the end of the second movie. But he's kind of in like a sort of looks like a cryo chamber type deal. So you don't get a voice yet.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of speculation as to, you know, what kind of direction with it. I thought that John Bernthal would be a good voice for it.
Oh, yeah.
With it there. But listen, Keanu Reeves' voice work, it's good. I love that the Sonic movies have such a big cast going on right now. Like, if you look at it, like, you get Jim Carrey, Idris Elba, and Keanu Reeves. What the fuck? Yes.
Yeah.
How are these movies? They're going to be great. And. Everyone is taking them seriously except for Jim Carrey, which is perfect for Dr. Robotnik.
Yeah.
And honestly, everyone loves it. Idris Elba loves playing Knuckles. He's promoting the fuck out of the show.
Yeah, and listen, these press tours, they're all great. Even Jim Carrey, who kind of doesn't really care anymore, he goes in the press tour and he's like, yeah, these are fun, whatever.
Well, I think Jim Carrey likes it. I think he likes the engagement with the kids.
Yes, like, I think so too.
I don't know how to phrase that better, but
yeah,
like I know he knows their kids' movies and he's there to promote it and make it fun for the kids. They were like, oh my God, it's Dr. Robotnik. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I think he has that appreciation to it. But listen, Keanu Reeves, great cast. His voice work that I've seen so far has been great. He was hysterical as Batman in League of Super Pets.
That's right. I forgot about
that. He was, yeah. And I really hope he plays it just like, because Knuckles ended up being kind of funnier than I think people were anticipating from Knuckles. And I think I really hope that they kind of play it straight. Like, I would just like to see him do full John Wick. Like, do you want a war, Dr. Robotnik?
That'd be brilliant.
Give me a gun.
Question for you.
Yes.
In Sonic 2, does he say, do you know the way? Knuckles, I mean.
I don't think he does, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does in the show.
Here's to hoping, you know? Here's to hoping.
The last words from Dr. Robotnik in the movie are laters, haters. And he goes, and then falls backwards.
Great. That's amazing. I have to watch this movie.
And that was great, too, because Jim Carrey said after that movie he was done. But you know what? He's back for 3. Oh, man. Oh. They're so good.
What a time. Mm-hmm. What a time. And with that down, guys, there's one more little story I wanted to talk about here. And we should say it's not from any confirmed source, like, or I should say confirmed, like trade, like Hollywood Reporter, Deadline, whatever. But it does come from Daniel RPK. And for those of you who aren't familiar, he's an inside scooper he's been doing scoops for many years now. And his scoops are fairly accurate. He has a very, very good track record, which is why a lot of his stories pick up attention. Mm-hmm. He recently on his Patreon stated that the Face-Off sequel that Adam Wingard, the director of the Godzilla Kong movies, has made.
Uh-huh.
That the Face-Off sequel
mm-hmm.
will have the return
mm-hmm.
of John Travolta and Nicolas Cage.
Fuck yeah.
And Nick, this is your time to shine.
I'll be completely unbearable if this is true. I want everyone to know. Oh my God, yes. Are they just going to re-swap faces? What is the story? Listen, the buddy cop dynamic, I hope they have to work together the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I'm so fucking excited. I hope it's true.
What if 4 people swap faces and it's like a whole thing?
Listen, I have always said I think I loved the approach that they did with Evil Dead Rise, and where it's just sort of like, here is 10, 15 million. I don't remember what the budget was. Mm-hmm. You know, go make your Evil Dead movie. And it's a great thing to give people IP to work with, you know, especially add some unique voices to horror, right? Let's do the same concept. New directors, couple of actors, let's start swapping faces. That being said, Nick Cage and Travolta back. The only concern I have about this is Travolta.
Go on.
He's been sort of off the rails lately, and I can't remember the last time I've seen him in something, one, or something good, two.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Cage, been crushing it lately. Nick Cage has rebounded so hard, and I am fully on board with it.
Yes.
So my only concern is that.
I'm just looking forward to the press tour after the movie's been shot. Because you know they're going to put Cage and Travolta together in the interviews. And we're going to get some crazy shit being said. And I'm excited for that.
I really like Adam Wingard.
Yeah.
I love the Godzilla Kong movies. They're very fun. They're lighthearted. You know, they're very fun watches. John Woo did such a good fucking job with Face Off.
Yes.
And he went so hard on it, and it could have just been this generic, cheesy action movie,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't. So my only concern is that it becomes that.
Well, listen, I'm just hoping we get the doves, because John Woo brings the doves, man.
John Woo brings the doves. Listen, I think I will get more excited, because honestly, I did get more excited about Godzilla Kong after listening to interviews specifically with Adam Wingard, because he's very passionate and was very enthusiastic about it. And I think if he brings that level to this, I'm going to be on board.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. 100%.
And listen, I think that, like I said, Cage has been on sort of this uptick lately, and I think that he would not come back to it if it wasn't something he felt like was worth exploring or something interesting. I mean, paycheck's one thing, you know, but that's always just sort of an innate concept there. But, you know, anyway, long story short, when do we get Con Air 2?
Great fucking question. I don't know. They should have made that forever ago by now. So
I don't know if I want a sequel or just a reboot.
Yeah.
Anyway, Face Off 2 we're getting, hopefully. I hope this breaks soon. I'll become more nervous the more idle it is.
Yeah, of like a trade not confirming it.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But guys, what do you think about John Travolta and Nicolas Cage potentially returning for Face Off 2? Let us know as we move on to the box office.
The box office.
Nicolas, do you have our predictions from last week?
I do.
Go on.
Dalton, you went Abigail number one. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare number two. Civil War number three, Godzilla Kong number four, and Ghostbusters number five.
Mm-hmm.
I went Abigail number one, Civil War number two, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare number three, Godzilla Kong number four, and Kung Fu Panda four number five.
Not only were we both wrong.
Oh boy.
We were hilariously wrong.
Well, that's always better, isn't it?
Always. Now, I do want to point out, as we do every time, these are the Sunday estimates. The final Monday numbers will be in the description of the video that you're watching, or if you're listening, it'll be in that description as well.
Mm-hmm.
Coming in first, holding number one from last week.
Really?
Civil War, dropping 56%, making $11.1 million in week two.
Goddamn.
Coming in just $1 million behind it, which we'll see if this holds on Monday, Abigail, making $10.2 million.
Okay.
Coming in third, Godzilla Kong the New Empire, making $9.4 million, only dropping 39% from week three to week four. Coming in fourth, the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare making $9 million. There's another close one that we have going on in its first week. And coming in fifth, we're dumb. We forgot there was an anime release, Nicholas. Spy X Family Code White from Crunchyroll making $4.8 million securely lands it in number five.
I think it's just Spy Family.
Oh, there's an X, and that's what threw me off.
Yeah.
Is it Spy Family?
I'm pretty sure it's just Spy Family.
If it's not Spy X Family, forgive me.
One of us is wrong, and I feel like we're going to know in the comments.
Oh, we'll find out. We'll find out big time. But that's okay. Good job to that movie for being fifth. It's going to have an 80% drop, but that's fine. Let's dive into these numbers a little bit more.
Yes.
Civil War, which maintained the number one spot, allegedly, now has $48 million worldwide on a budget of $50, so it's right at that budget. By tomorrow, it'll be at that budget. Has a little bit more to go for profitability, especially for A24, but it has officially made its production budget back as of, like, tomorrow. Abigail worldwide has made $15.2 million, which is an interesting get for Abigail. It was made on a budget of, I believe, $28 million. So it has a while to go, but we'll see. The story there is going to be how it holds. If it holds well, it'll be fine.
I think it came out with a B minus cinema score. Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see how it carries.
Yeah, which typically in box office can be a rattler. We'll see. Horror movies also just tend to have lower scores. So
yeah,
we'll see there as well. Godzilla Kong the New Empire has made, Jesus Christ, $485 million worldwide on a budget of $135. That 3.6. We're going to get more MonsterVerse movies, baby.
People like the monkey fighting the lizard.
Lizard monkey. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare has made $9 million. Has not opened worldwide yet. It was made on a budget of $60. So it has a while to go, but it did get an A- cinema score, which should be good for holding it. I think the only big thing we have opening this week is Challengers.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that holds.
It'd be interesting. You said it hasn't opened worldwide yet?
Mm-mm. Which I'm sure it will.
Do you think that has like some worldwide appeal to it?
It might, especially in the UK.
Oh, true. Guy Ritchie's probably bigger. Yeah.
So we'll see.
That would make sense.
Spy X Family, has made... sorry, dog. My dog's trying to get in here. Has made $44 million worldwide. I don't have the budget. I imagine it's not crazy high,
mm-hmm.
but we'll kind of see how it goes. If you hear my dog whining, I apologize. Speaking of the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, I thought it'd be interesting to take a look back at some of Guy Ritchie's most recent films
mm-hmm.
and look at kind of the roller coaster he's been going on with box office, because he's been cranking out movies.
He has, was it like six in the last 4 years or something like that?
Something like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start with The Gentleman, which was his first movie after Aladdin, which had grossed $1 billion. And even before that, King Arthur, which is great, by the way, did not do very well. Then Aladdin made $1 billion, so he had a back-to-back weirds right there.
I think it should be studied how quickly he got out of director jail.
Yes, and but let's start with The Gentleman, which opened in 2019, made $113 million worldwide on a budget of $22 million. So 5 times his budget back, does pretty well, right? Good for him.
Mm-hmm. Great movie, too.
Yes, excellent movie. Then in 2021, he did Wrath of Man, which made $103 million worldwide on a budget of $40, making $2.6. Just got profitability there. Just got it.
Wrath of Man had a bigger budget than The Gentlemen?
Correct.
I refuse to believe this. And I like Wrath of Man.
Listen, I just imagine Jason Statham is more expensive. Then...
than Colin Farrell?
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Then, in 2023, he had Operation Fortune, which made only $27 million worldwide. Quite literally, no one saw that movie. I did, in theaters, and it's lovely. You should watch it. And that was made on a budget of $50, so it made 0.6 times its production budget. Not good. It was also kind of left out to die. It was a weird release strategy for that movie. Then, in the same year... you have Guy Ritchie's The Covenant. Great movie with Jake Gyllenhaal. Only made $20 million worldwide. Two in a row. And that was made, I don't have the budget listed, but it does not look cheap. I imagine it was around somewhere in the 60 to 80 range.
That's probably also just a lot of Gyllenhaal too, right?
Correct. And so he had hit, kind of hit, flop, flop. Even though I like all of those movies.
Even though they're all good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's like, why is his career doing this? Like, it's a very strange thing. And part of it was, a lot of it's COVID, of course. But even 2021, in the shit of COVID, Wrath of Man did okay. So it's just kind of like this weird thing going on with his films. And with a...
isn't Operation Fortune have Statham?
Yeah.
So it's not even like Statham was in Wrath of Man.
Yeah.
He has box office. The Beekeeper made over 150.
Yeah.
Or 100.
Yeah.
Beekeeper did well.
Yeah, it made very good profit.
The Meg movies, everything with Jason Statham does well. It's interesting.
It was a very odd thing. And now you have Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which is made on a budget of $60.
Mm-hmm.
So one good thing is he's keeping the budgets relatively modest to keep making these films.
Yeah.
But you can't have three flops in a row. And so we got to see if this movie is going to make some more money. Hopefully it does, because I would hate to see Guy Ritchie back in director jail, because he doesn't deserve it at all.
Well, the thing is, like, I feel like director jail a lot of time, too, speaks to the quality of the movie.
Not really.
You think it's all box office?
Mostly.
Really?
I think it's a combination of things. Mm-hmm. Like, Damien Chazelle does not deserve to be in director jail at all.
Yeah.
And he is. Oh, he has a new movie coming out, but we'll see how it goes. Because
mm-hmm.
he's in there because of Babylon. And I don't think Babylon's a bad movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just happened. But it was very expensive, and it did not do very well.
Mm-hmm.
So, just kind of one of those things.
Anyway, go see Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, because I want more Guy Ritchie movies.
Me too, and it's very good.
Where,
I enjoyed it.
Where do you think? What do you think happens then? Do you think he kind of moves on to like a streaming, like streaming movies with low budgets, or do you think
maybe? I mean, he has produced The Gentleman Show.
Yeah,
I could see him doing maybe more series,
like a Netflix thing.
Yeah.
Does he have anything?
But he's very much a movie guy.
I wonder if he has anything like on. I'll just use IMDb as a as a base of like anything coming up or in development. Upcoming projects in the gray, expected January 17th, 2025, revolves around two extraction specialists who have to designate a route of escape for a senior female negotiator. And you got Jake Gyllenhaal, Henry Cavill, Isa Gonzalez, and Rosamund Pike. It's a good cast.
Yeah.
So at least he has something there. So that's clearly getting made. So I guess maybe that'll also be a determining factor.
Yeah. But everyone knows also when your job is coming out, book a new job quickly. So, you know, just in case. But yeah, I want to take a look at the Guy Ritchie box office. It's the weird turns. And even if you go back further, it gets weirder.
Yeah.
So I love Guy Ritchie and I hope he continues to make movies and hopefully they make some more money. But with that said, Nicholas, predictions for next week.
Oh boy. What do we have coming out besides Challengers?
We have We Grown Now. We have Boy Kills World.
Is that a limited release?
Probably.
All right, I have my predictions.
Hit me.
All right, I'm going Challengers number one.
Okay.
I'm going Civil War dropping to number two.
Okay.
Abigail. I'm going to go Ministry getting an uptick, and then I'm going to round it out with Godzilla.
I'm going to do exactly the same thing, but I think the Ministry uptick will go above Abigail. So I'm going to go Challenger, Civil War, Ministry, Abigail, Godzilla.
All right.
And I think the cinema scores will come into effect there. I don't want to see that happen to Abigail, but we'll see.
I don't want to see it happen to Abigail, but I want to see it happen to Ministry.
I need Ministry to get more money. Because, like, Abigail's going to get that budget back on a worldwide release. Like, it's gonna get to 2.5. I'm pretty confident in that.
Here's my thing. I have no concerns about Radio Silence making another movie and getting money to do something.
I am concerned
about Guy Ritchie. I'm very concerned about Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, so we have to make that happen, 100%.
I mean, Radio Silence already has their, like, untitled horror movie coming out with Melissa Barrera that they're going to start shooting next, right?
I think so.
Their untitled monster movie?
Yeah.
You know, they're locked and loaded. Guy Ritchie's tomorrow is not promised.
We need to make sure it is promised. Please go support Guy Ritchie's movie.
And rewatch King Arthur.
Yes, because it's great. It's great, and it didn't deserve... Let's pull up that money. I'm pissed I didn't do that earlier. Give me 1 second.
There are approximately 4 people that like that movie, and I know all 4 of them.
Same.
And one of them is me.
Jesus, God. Okay. On a budget of $175 million, King Arthur and the Legend of the Sword made $139 million. Made 0.7 times his budget back, but domestically, 39. 100 of it was international. He made $39 million domestically. It did not deserve that. That movie is great. I love it. I love it. Shame. I wish he'd make Sherlock Holmes 3. That'd be really nice.
Yeah.
You know what? He can fall on that. If he can't get funding, he'll be like, I'll do Sherlock Holmes 3 with Robert and Jude. And then they're like, you son of a bitch, you got us.
Do you think you can get Robert back coming off an Oscar win?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it won't be cheap, but I think Robert likes Guy. I'm not worried about that. Yeah. So, 100%.
Man, what's Jude Law got going on?
Just Star Wars. That old thing.
He's in Star Wars.
He's in Skeleton Crew.
Jude Law's in Skeleton Crew?
He's like the main adult lead.
It's like something controversial yet brave.
Go on.
I don't like Jude Law.
Why not?
I don't know. Everything I've seen him in, I've been indifferent on.
Oh, jeez. Well,
I think Marvel's really got me with him.
Gotcha. Well, that's the show, everyone. Thanks once again for tuning in to our buffoonery. We'll catch you next week with some more stories. We're going to have a bunch of interactive posts in our YouTube community tab. Make sure you're looking at that. And be sure to follow us on social media where we're going to be posting clips from the show as well. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we will see you on the next one.